Steve, how's it going?
It's going great. How about you?
Everything is good. It's I'm kind of amazed that the NFL seemingly is going to finish this season on time. Five months ago, I never thought this would be the case, but it just goes to show what you can do when you have a gigantic amount of money, a bottomless pit of money, and you want to get something done. And they've gotten it done, so credit to them.
And that's I'll flip it over to what I do, and that is, Penn State had 9 scheduled football games this season. They played all 9, which Jack Ham and I thought was a remarkable accomplishment considering everything that's going on.
Yeah, because most teams, I don't obviously follow the college game very closely, but I'm watching and teams are getting games postponed on the Thursday before the game. It wasn't the most amazing thing that happened this year in the college season when Brigham Young had an opening.
Coastal.
And, what was it? On Thursday, they make a deal to go play, Coastal Carolina?
Yep.
And it was a great game. I found myself watching, the fourth quarter of that game and saying, oh, my gosh, these are two really good teams fighting to the finish. It was a tremendous football game, and it's kind of funny. You think, oh my God, all this for a football game, but then they play a game like that, and look, I have no idea the financial stakes involved or anything, but boy, it sure seemed worth it to me.
Yeah, it seemed worth it to me. And I know I'll give you a recent example, basketball. Penn State, because of circumstances, this week was supposed to play Wisconsin on Wednesday, and then it got switched
where
to Michigan.
Where was the game?
It's going to be here.
Yeah.
And then then Michigan, they were able to manipulate the schedule and push Wisconsin to Saturday because they needed to make up a game with Michigan on Wednesday. Then the Department of Health at Michigan said Michigan is shut down for 2 weeks. So Penn State played at Ohio State last night. And now Wisconsin is still Saturday, and then Penn State goes out to Wisconsin next Tuesday. So,
hey, in other words, they moved the Wisconsin game to this weekend.
Yes.
When in reality, they could have played it last night because Michigan couldn't play.
Right. So what they did was they had Wisconsin play a game at Maryland. Penn State ended up playing at Ohio State. And now I'm getting ready for Penn State and Wisconsin Saturday here, and I've got back-to-back games to get ready for. So at least the preparation for the second game will be easier.
But let me just ask you this question. I'm curious about this. So when Wisconsin plays at State College, all right?
Yep.
I assume they fly in, right? Do they?
Yes.
Do they fly in on a smaller plane right to State College?
Yeah, you can fly right into State College. So that's no issue at all. And the airport's 4, where the stadium is. It's only 4 miles from the stadium.
Yeah, and so it's fairly easy then. If they fly from Madison to State College, that's probably an hour 20, something like that. So I was thinking that, in my head, I'm thinking, oh, my God, if you got to do this commercial, this is going to be a gigantic pain to go Madison, Chicago, I guess either State College or Harrisburg or something. It would be a mess, but it's got to be incredibly convenient, probably on one of those 30-seat planes,
Yeah, it's all charter, Peter. For football and basketball, it's all charter, which makes a gigantic difference for them. And class-wise, it makes a difference too. If you're playing a road game, now Penn State plays at Ohio State last night. The trip back is 35 minutes. Well, they're in class this morning. They're in class this morning.
When they go to Ohio State, and the game is what? The game was what? 8 o'clock last night.
7 o'clock.
So would they leave? Yesterday was Wednesday. They'd leave on Tuesday late day, or what would they do?
Tuesday late day. All right. Get there. Then. Play the game at 7, back on the plane, probably back here by 11 last night.
Yeah. And what do they do? Have a shoot around during the day on Wednesday?
Yeah, an hour and a half shoot around. They'll just go over, book out 2 hours, take 15 minutes, go to the gym, shoot around. I'll usually do the pregame show with the coach there, and then, you know, then after the hour and a half, then wait for the game.
And then how has your job changed in terms of, you know, being able to be close to players and close to the coach? How is it different this year?
Yeah, harder, as you know. Yeah, as you know. I mean, this is something you and I have talked about before. You've had to do more things on Zoom, and you're a hands-on reporter. You're a reporter. The reason, one of the big reasons I read you all the time, besides loyalty, of course, is because you'll sit down and, quote, get your hands dirty. You'll talk to somebody informally. You'll walk with them, talk with them, be in a camp and so forth. It's the same thing with me. I'm at every practice. I mean, it may be the same stuff they're doing all the time, but as you know, the amount of information you can get by, quote, being there, you know, is invaluable just as background for you. And the players know who you are, right? It's not unfamiliar to them. It's a familiar face. And I think that helps them as well because it helps with the trust part of it.
I'll tell you, you know, just in terms of we're talking about how to do the job these days, I'll give you a really good example of how different it is, okay? So last year in the off week before the Super Bowl, for the previous 5 years before this year, I went to drive to work one day with one of the Super Bowl coaches. The year the Eagles were in it, I met Doug Peterson at a Wawa near his house in South Jersey. Then the next year I did Sean McVay Saturday morning from Encino, California, riding with him to the Rams facility. Last year, I did it with Andy Reid, in Kansas City. And so, you know, you sit in the car, you have a conversation, you chat, you whatever. So that has kind of been my thing. So this year, obviously, you can't do it. Right. So what I decided to do is I asked both PR guys, I'd like to get a guy, if he wouldn't mind, to sort of simulate this. And that's the wrong word, really, simulate it. But like this morning at 4:15, I got up in my apartment in Brooklyn, and I called Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator of the Bucks, and we talked for about 30 minutes. He got out of the car, went into work. The benefit to them is, you know, they're done with me when they, you know, when they walk in the building. You know,
right?
So it's a benefit almost that instead of having to take 20 to 30 minutes at some point during the day, they can just do it when they're in their car instead of listening to whatever radio they'd be listening to. And then Saturday, I'm going to do Eric Bieniemy, the Chiefs' offensive coordinator. And theoretically, you would think that this game is going to be about, does Todd Bowles and his defense have enough to slow down Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Kelce a little bit? So that's what I'm doing this year. But it just won't be the same in not actually being there with them. You know, but you know, look, I'm not crying about it. I'm just saying that almost everything these days you have to adjust.
Are you actually going to go to the game, Peter?
I am going to the game, yeah. We thought about it. And there's nobody else from NBC going, in fact. And I thought about it, and I decided, look, I have been living with this in this pandemic, because I live in Brooklyn, and, you know, we've sort of been in the belly of the beast for, I guess, almost 11 months now, 10 months, whatever.
Right.
And I've been wearing a mask every day since whatever day 3 or 4 of this thing. And so my wife and I are very careful, and I don't have any fear, and I don't do stupid things, but I have no fear. If I see somebody walking toward me on the sidewalk without a mask, I move to the other side or I wait for that person to pass. But we're a very masked society here in New York, and so I just figured that I'm going to be careful. I know exactly how to do this, and just to be safe next week, I'm going to double mask, and so I am going to go to the game.
Okay, that's great. I have to. Can you give us a little bit? take us inside. Now, it's not the room this year. You had to do it by Zoom. But what's it like when you do sit down in the room and you're, there's only five that can make the Hall of Fame? To me, this is as difficult a Hall of Fame to make, despite what Curt Schilling thinks, than any of them, because there's thousands and thousands of players to consider. What's that room like, and what are you listening for when you make that decision?
Well, you're right. It's really a tough thing. This year, we had one coaching candidate that we considered. The Hall of Fame meeting happens basically in two distinct ways. We have three people who were one advanced by the seniors committee. Okay, we have one coach advanced by the coaches committee or coaches subcommittee, and then we have a contributor advanced by the the contributors subcommittee, which I'm on. That I think will be a pretty easy choice. It seemed like a slam dunk to me this year. When I'll sort of explain this so that people kind of get a full view of it. Those three people have to get 80% of the vote. Okay, and the contributor that we nominated this year was Bill Nunn, the longtime Steelers scout and the guy who really made an art form of scouting historically black colleges. Brought Dwight White, John Stallworth, L.C. Greenwood. Really, it was he did a tremendous job for the Steelers. So I think he's probably going to get in. The coach in this year was Tom Flores. Those guys have to get 80% of the vote. But then you get to the modern era candidates. There's 15 of those. And you listen to the cases for everyone. And then you vote and you cut them down from 15 to 10. And then you listen to a few more arguments. And then you cut it down from 10 to 5. The 10 who survived the cut from 15 to 10. Then you've got to vote 10 to 5. So what's really interesting about it is at the start of every year, I look at my sheet before I hear any arguments, and I just put a little dot next to the people who I think going into the meeting I would vote for if they got to the final five. And in my opinion, this year, 12 of the 15 I would have voted for. So, and you can only put five in. So wow. Really, it's quite hard to do. And as opposed to other halls of fame, and look, I mean, obviously, I read a lot about the Baseball Hall of Fame, and I don't.
Same here.
I don't know what's right or wrong with steroids. I just don't. Tony Dungy was telling me a couple of weeks ago when he was talking about decision making. He goes, you know, we all wish that all decisions were 90-10, but the reality is. Most of the big ones are about 55-45, if that. You know, whether in football or in life, you know. And so you try to make the decision the best you can, and you understand that some of the people who you think belong in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, you're voting for people over them. And so it isn't like you're voting no on somebody who doesn't get to the final five. It's that you can only vote for five, and so that's the business of that Hall of Fame. And its meeting this year was 8 hours and 43 minutes, and sometimes it gets intense. And I mean, it never gets you bleepity bleep, but it gets very, very opinionated and sometimes a little bit loud. And it's an interesting little exercise to do once a year.
You also had the stat of the year, by the way, Peyton Manning discussion, 13 seconds. To me, I read that. I almost fell off my chair laughing when I read that.
Yeah. But, here's the point about that, honestly. The year that Joe Montana came up, Ira Miller of the San Francisco Chronicle stood up and he said, ladies and gentlemen, Joe Montana, and he just sat down. So this was the same thing basically this year. Mike Chappell of the, longtime beat writer of the Colts just said, because we were on Zoom, we're on a video conference, he goes, Peyton Manning and I know you can't see me very well here, but if I had a mic, I would drop the mic right now. And that was it. It was kind of cool, kind of funny.
Well, it's interesting because Ira came into the broadcast booth. I think we were at Michigan.
Oh, he loves the Lions.
Yes. Well, he comes in. Oh, yeah, he does. You know, he's tailgated out there with us. You know Ira. And he wanted to talk to Jack Ham about Ray Guy. And he pointed out, you know, I'm just sitting as a bystander. He says, you know, Peter King really likes Gerald Wilson. I looked over. I said, well, Ira, no offense, but Peter's got a point. Not Gerald Wilson.
It's funny he said that because I said at the very end, I voted for Ray Guy.
Oh, I know you.
He was getting in, and it wasn't that. You know, I think there's a lot of good candidates for the Hall of Fame. I really do. But the fact is, just my opinion, Ray Guy is not a singular punter in history. If you look at Gerald Wilson, his numbers, his awards, all that stuff are pretty much the same. And I just kept asking the question, why are we voting for this guy instead of Gerald Wilson? And I don't mean it disrespectfully. I'm asking the question. So anyway, but it's definitely an imperfect science, and people are very, very passionate about it. I mean, really, the campaigns now are really getting a little out of control, but that's just the way it is. People are interested in football.
Can I just one more question, then I'll let you go, because I really appreciate the time. In your mind, you said you put down dots next to 12 of the 15.
Yep.
What does the waiting game mean eventually in your decision about a candidate if they've been on there X amount of time? Does that...
Well, here's a great example. I almost never use that as a factor because I just don't think it's fair. But this year, Clay Matthews, the old Cleveland linebacker, was up. And it is the first time, you know, after 14 years that his candidacy was getting an airing in the room before the full committee. So he had never been a finalist, ever. And he really does have a heck of a resume. It's almost like, I'd compare it to almost like a Carl Yastrzemski, a guy who played a long time and compiled great numbers. And, I mean, Yaz won the MVP in 67 and all that stuff, and Clay Matthews, you know, never did that. But still, he was really good for a long time, played at a high level for a long time, and this was it. This is the last year he was going to be eligible. And if he didn't make it this year, and I still don't know if he made it or not, but if he didn't make it this year, he goes into the senior pool where there are anywhere from between, you know, maybe 90 to about 130 legitimate, really good candidates for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But, you know, having had his case heard so recently, it's unlikely that the seniors committee, which brings one player up for a vote every year, just one. I mean, and I don't mean to be dramatic, but if Clay Matthews didn't make it this year, chances are pretty good that he wouldn't be alive if he ever did make it, you know?
Right.
And so one of the points I think should not be lost in that case is that, let's say a guy is on his second or third year of eligibility versus Clay Matthews. If you truly believe Clay Matthews is a Hall of Famer, if you don't, you shouldn't vote for him.
Right.
But if you truly believe that he is, in my opinion, I don't like to use this term, but in my opinion, I don't have a problem with somebody voting for Clay Matthews to jump the line. And so, I mean, we'll see what happens. I truly don't know if he's getting in or not, but that's the attitude I have for cases like that. And it's so, you know, to look at these guys every year, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous. Alan Faneca, struggles to get in. But having said that, it's I understand why he does struggle, because there are so many other great candidates.
Right.
Alan Faneca or Charles Woodson, who do you want? Alan
right.
Faneca, Calvin Johnson. Alan Faneca, John Lynch. I mean, yeah. you got Peyton Manning is going in. You know, that's one of your five votes right there, if you've watched any football over the last 30 years. But beyond that, then you've got all these tough choices to make. And so anyway, but it's an interesting day.
And all I know is that Peter King put a smile on my face, because from our youth, you and me combined, mentioning the name Carl Yastrzemski brings with
that
great
was our guy, out. Wasn't it, Steve?
That was our guy, Peter. Yaz was our guy.
He was, yeah. Yeah, Yaz was really amazing. And
he
Steve,
was.
At one point, I said to myself, you know, if I can't play left field for the Red Sox, maybe one day I'd be able to write about the left fielder for the Red Sox. So I'm not actually writing about Andrew Benintendi right now, but you kind of get the point.
I get the point. But I was at the game when Jim Rice got his first major league hit, so I was there for one left field.
How about that? Ahead. That's great.
I was with my grandfather. Peter,
that's great.
Thanks so much, my friend. Really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, Steve. Anytime. Enjoy the rest of the basketball season. Good luck.
You too. Enjoy going down to the Super Bowl. Please stay safe, okay?
Will do, Steve. Thanks a lot.